Of course, others may take. But as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the game to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Here we go, hour one. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. This is where the past meets the future, and here the results are always positive. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. We are coming to you live through the America Free Radio Studios on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com. We are also streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, DLive, Twitch, Facebook, and Foxhole. So we welcome all of you here to the broadcast tonight. Memorial Day weekend, I'm going to be down in Dallas at the Patriot Voice event with General Mike Flynn and others, great speakers down there. Jordan Sather is going to be down there. Zach from Red Pill 78 is going to be there. These are great guys. I know them both. I've spoken to both of them. They deserve to be at this event. This is the event that's going to kick off the lecture, the rally series for the America First agenda. So this is really smart. It's really smart. President Trump is letting the surrogates build the wave. And he's being very smart, including great voices like Jordan and Zach and others that are going to be involved in this because they know this is where the voters are. This is where America is. This is where the patriots are. So glad to have you here on Foxhole and all the other platforms. We are also watching the chat room very carefully. So anyone who posts, Trucker Will's up there on Twitch, Freedom on YouTube, lots of YouTube people. Don't forget DLive. DLive is not hooked up yet. We're still waiting for it to connect, but sometimes it takes a few minutes for DLive to get there. And the reason I say that is I always give away lemons on DLive because I value my audience and I like to reward them for coming because I know sooner or later they're going to reward me for providing this great content to you each Wednesday and each Sunday at 8 p.m. All right, let's get started. We have a lot to go over. First up is clean space. Clean space. You've heard of safe space? Well, this is clean space. Yes. Hello, Laughter Man. Good to see you out there. Who is it? Burkago? That's a weird one. Burkago. Want to become famous? Oh, yeah. It's an ad. That's why I haven't seen it before. Okay. Agatha Velvet. Good to see you. Wild Bill, Marco Sepien. Of course, Papa Susie. Great. DLive is DLive. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. We'll wing it. The recent fall to Earth of the massive Chinese rocket has renewed concerns about the perils of space junk, and one project from the European Space Agency might be able to help. We have mentioned on this program several times job opportunities for those of you that want to get into this business of space, that cleaning up the junk in space is a good way to go. There's a lot of inexpensive ways to grab trash in space and haul it into the atmosphere where it'll burn up. Or you could be like this company. The European Space Agency announced plans to launch a space debris removal mission in 2025 with the help of a Swiss startup called Clear Space. You see what I'm saying? Somebody was listening to this program and they built a startup and they got the attention of the European Space Agency. The mission, which is dubbed Clear Space One, will use an experimental four-armed robot to capture a Vega secondary payload adapter called Vespa, left behind by the European Space Agency's Vega launcher in 2013. Now, this piece of space junk is located about 500 miles up. So it's low Earth orbit, but it's substantial low Earth orbit. It weighs about 220 pounds, so it's not all that huge. However, something traveling at 20,000 miles an hour that weighs 220 pounds is a serious missile. So you want to get that out of the way. Now, to give you an idea what this looks like, I don't even know if I have one on my asteroid mining ad. Let me see if I can grab my asteroid mining ad. I'll run that on the video so you can see some of the spacecraft that are being built right now. But this kind of has four arms, and it goes out like this, and then I'll bring it right up to the camera, and then the arms close around it like this, and that's how it's going to capture that satellite. And then it's going to just open up a chute or something and drag itself into the atmosphere. Let's see here. Think of all the orbital captures that have occurred up till this point, and they have all taken place with cooperative, fully controlled target objects. With space debris, by definition, no such control is possible. Instead, the objects are dead. They're drifting. They're just junk out there, tumbling randomly. The European Space Agency recently signed a $104 million contract with ClearSpace to accomplish this one feat. Get this one satellite. Prove that it can be done. Team's going to use a ClearSpace One robot to capture Vespa from low Earth orbit and drag it down into Earth's atmosphere where both the spacecraft and the satellite are going to burn up. If all goes according to plan, the mission will be the first removal of a previously generated piece of space junk from orbit, according to the statement. This first capture and the disposal of an uncooperative space object represents an extremely challenging achievement. And there are a lot of challenges with this. People don't think of all this stuff, but we do here on this program. Number one is, what if the satellite owner doesn't want his satellite captured? He's afraid of some of the technology that might be on that satellite. The other thing to think of is, what if the satellite is very valuable? What if it has a lot of gold and platinum and, you know, valuable things on it that could be recycled? What would happen if you grabbed it and threw a chute on it, puffed the chute out and let it land in the ocean, and then go pick it up later and maybe there's $20 million worth of gold in it? You don't know. There are other things to consider. There are cheaper ways of doing this than shooting up a $100 million spacecraft to grab a $20 million satellite. You see, you can't make up for that in volume. There's no money to be made. So you could do other things, like just sticking a big long, you know, tape to it, or a ribbon or a cable, or put a solar sail on, a cheap solar sail, something that would grab the solar wind and push it on out into space, you know, out of the solar system. There are other things that could be done. At orbital velocities, even a little screw can hit with explosive force. It's like a 22 caliber bullet going 22,000 miles an hour. And you can't shield against it, really. I mean, you can have a big, thick kind of urethane Kevlar wall like Bigelow has when he puts his stuff up there, and it might stop a screw. But would it stop a bolt? Would it stop a screwdriver? You ever drop a screwdriver from 10 stories? That could be do some serious damage. So this tow truck design is going to be available to clear key orbits of big debris that might otherwise make them unstable for future missions. We want to kind of clean that highway up so other things can be put there that do work and would not fare well against a 220-pound piece of metal crashing into it. And there are a lot of pieces up there, over a million of them. And this is the first time the ESA has paid for a service contract such as this instead of directly procuring and running the entire mission. And this is an important threshold. And you know why this threshold was crossed? It was crossed because private industry, not just SpaceX, but also other companies you don't even know of, people that make retro rockets, people that make ion drives, people that make high gain solar panels, people that make plutonium batteries, all of these private companies have been successful supplying space. You know, SpaceX makes $14 million on average profit every single time they launch something up for NASA. And they reuse their boosters, they reuse their rockets, and they have great success with their capsules as well. So, you know, the Dragon capsules and the Falcon rockets are all doing very well, and they're making money. And what has happened is, once this threshold has been crossed, two ways. First of all, the private companies are making money. And second of all, the governments are saving money by cutting through the red tape and hiring these startups to do the job. So it's great both ways. Government doesn't get any bigger, and private industry gets to show off its latest technology. So in addition to the contract with the European Space Agency, by the way, ClearSpace is going to rely on commercial investors. You commercial investors out there with lots of money and don't know what to do with it except buy Dogecoin. Commercial investors to cover the mission costs as part of European Space Agency's Clean Space Initiative and active debris removal in orbit servicing projects. They call it ADRIOS. The space agency will provide essential technologies, including advanced guidance, the robotic arms, navigation, control systems, and vision-based artificial intelligence, which will allow ClearSpace One to grapple its target autonomously. It's very difficult to fly that thing from a joystick from the ground. You have to have a lot of bandwidth. Those of you gamers know exactly what I'm talking about. You don't have enough bandwidth, you're going to get assassinated from some other player in Romania. But if you give the craft AI and you give it all the dimensions and the temperature and the location, and if it's tumbling, the spacecraft can artificially match the tumble and thus approach it without you know, walking into a buzzsaw, so to speak. A Vespa is a reasonable first target for ClearSpace One, given that it is a relatively simple shape. It's sturdy. It's not going to fly to pieces when they grab it. And it's about the size of a small satellite. If all goes according to plan, the team can leverage the same technology to capture even bigger stuff. Yeah, and more challenging. Pieces of space debris that are not together. They're ripped, jagged, wire-hanging, cable-dragging pieces of junk floating through space. The team plans to first test ClearSpace One in a lower orbit of about 310 miles prior to launching the mission to capture Vespa in 2025. The plan is that this pioneering capture forms the foundation of a recurring business case. I think it would be really smart to have a refueling craft up there. You could launch your grabber, go get the satellite, bring it over close to Earth or slow it down enough to let it fall into Earth's atmosphere naturally, release it, and then jet back over to the refueling craft and fill back up again and go get another one. I could see, you know, there was a movie. What was it? Space Sweepers? Did you see that movie? It was pretty good, wasn't it? I liked it. I actually watched it twice. I mean, the plot was simple enough, but the sci-fi was good and the special effects were good, and I enjoyed the movie. So with 500,000 pieces of space debris, there's enough room for more clear space companies. Yep. According to NASA, this means there's a growing problem of cluttering up our access road to space. Several companies and entities have proposed ways to get rid of derelict satellites and other space junk. There's 7 proposals out there. I'm not going to go through them all, but the technology is pretty cool. One of the techniques is to push the debris out of space. And, of course, ClearSpace One is a technology demonstration spacecraft that's going to kind of drag it out of space. And then it's going to burn up along with the satellite. The other is to use the power of electricity. The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, also known as JAXA, they're quite dynamic, quite advanced, very smart guys over there. They've built a big rover. I think you can see the picture of it in my rotation slides there on Asteroid Mining, The Future of Energy, which is my latest book. By the way, it's all in color, so you know that a color book is expensive to publish. So this book's going to set you back about $30, but I couldn't do it in black and white. It just needed the color. You needed to see what some of this stuff is, and the color just brings it out so much better. And the resolution of the color printing is so much better. So I spent the money to bring you a quality book. And the least you can do is put it on your coffee table for when your friends come over. Or in your doctor's office. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, chiropractors, doctors, dentists, this is the book. You need to put this one on display. I guarantee you people will read it. It's easy to read, and it brings people up to date with all the latest and upcoming space programs, including 3 chapters on Space Force. So the electric one is going to slow the satellite speed. It's going to make it gradually fall to Earth, where it will burn up, and a satellite using part of the system was expected to launch February 28th with a tether test proposed for 2015. This is kind of like, I mean, have you ever done any carpentry work? Yes. Anybody in the chat room, any carpentry work? And with electric power tools, not battery powered ones, but the ones that run on a fuel line, a power cord. Have you ever noticed how the extension cord hangs up on everything? You know, like you plug it in and then you stretch out to the job and it knots itself up, wraps around one of the yard lights or hooks underneath the tire of the car in the driveway. This is the idea behind the tether. They just took this frustrating technology and they said, what if we just connect a big extension cord to one of these satellites and just kind of let it hang out there? And it's gonna grab onto something. And eventually that satellite's gonna slow down. Might take 6 months, but it's gonna slow down, and then it and the extension cord, the tether, are gonna burn up in the atmosphere. And it's a low tech way. And you could send a cleanup crew up there, a mechanical one, of course. Wouldn't it be cool though to have that as a job, huh? Launch up there and like knock down about 30 satellites in a week and then jet back to Earth. That would be a cool job, wouldn't it? All you have to do is stick an extension cord, a big old 100-footer to them, and that would be it. The next one, of course, is the solar sail. That's basically a big solar blanket. You mechanically expand it in space, and what happens is a solar wind catches in the sail and creates a little extra velocity in another direction, and eventually that thing is going to burn up in the atmosphere or head on out of into outer space. And the other one is by Raytheon, and I'm glad to see Raytheon doing something like this. Every time I see Raytheon in military news, it's because, you know, they make the Hellfire missile and they make weapons of war. But this is called Huffing and Puffing, and it's Raytheon's technology. It's called a space debris elimination, or SPADE. And it's designed to push satellites into lower orbit by using air bursts within the atmosphere. A design proposal from Daniel Gregory of Raytheon in Virginia, by the way, would use a balloon or high-altitude plane to send the bursts out, which early studies in 2012 indicated would be enough to disturb the paths of a low Earth orbital debris. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but maybe you people in Foxhole don't know it because you haven't listened to this program before. But Earth's atmosphere is thinning, okay? It's thinning because the sun has not been issuing forth its coronal mass ejections or solar flares. You know, when these things lash out into space, sometimes they lash toward Earth. And those high energy particles fall into our upper atmosphere, causing occasional cosmic rays and other reactions with our ionosphere. But the mass stays around. It builds up our atmosphere. Well, since 2012, the sun's been very quiet. Yeah, it hasn't put out much. And so what happens is the solar wind blows away some of Earth's atmosphere, especially very, very high altitude atmosphere. Some of the Earth's atmosphere reaches all the way to the moon. Yes, it does. And this atmosphere blows away. And what's happened is the atmosphere has noticeably become thinner. Proof of this is that the GPS satellites are lasting way longer than they were designed to last because they are on a slowly decaying orbit. And that orbit should have been skidding against the upper atmosphere a long time ago, but it hasn't. So those satellites are still going around. And even though the GPS replacement's about 4 years behind schedule, everything's okay because the old satellites are still working because they're not dragging against our atmosphere. Now, that has some side effects. Other side effects besides making satellites last a bunch longer. The first is we lose our insulative blanket around the Earth. So when the sun is not shining on the Earth is radiating its energy back out into space. We call that the albedo of a planet. When it radiates its solar energy it receives from the sun back out into space. And the other thing that happens is that the energy that does come to us from the sun, the infrared, ultraviolet, especially shortwave radiation, is reaching the surface without being blocked and scattered by the atmosphere. There's no greenhouse effect because the upper atmosphere has been blown away. So what we have seen is a steady, although slight, drop in the overall temperature of the Earth. And this, of course, has had several effects. One is that every single glacier in the world is growing and has been for a while. And they're growing at a quite rapid rate. It's kind of alarming, to tell you the truth. we are, because we are further away from the sun in our elliptical orbit, we're further away from the sun during the northern hemisphere's summer, and we're closer to the sun, about 50,000 miles closer, when the southern hemisphere has its summer. So their summers are very intense because all of the solar radiation is striking the surface of the planet unfettered. And the winter times are more brutal because in the southern hemisphere, they're more extreme because the Earth is radiating its energy back out into space. So what we're seeing is the snow mass, the ice mass of Antarctica is moving. Some of it is melting off and other parts of it are growing. And it isn't a net loss, it's a net gain. Antarctica is growing in size, but the ice that's melting off is being replaced by other ice elsewhere. Same thing with the Arctic. The Arctic red ice, that's not the color red, but red ice means ice that lasts through the summer and then is snowed on and free freezes the next winter. Red ice is back to levels it was at before 1984. And it's alarming because it wouldn't take much, like this last winter we had that triple polar vortex, which a lot of you know about, but the news didn't say a whole lot about it. It went all the way down to Texas, killed a bunch of chickens, you know, turned out the lights for all. You know that polar vortex, don't you? Well, there was one in Europe at the same time that refroze part of the Thames River, first time in 60 years. And there was also one in Asia at the same time. So when you put those three together, the only other time it's happened is, well, never. It's never happened before. Triple polar vortexes had a very chilling effect on the northern hemisphere. Oh, yeah, it did. And all it would take is one of these to go over the threshold and you begin to move the farm belt south. And when you move the farm belt south, you're changing the way the land can support the people. Right now, the wheat belt in North America goes up to about Alberta, Canada. If the temperatures began to be more, let's say, ice age-like, and the farm belt pushed south, let's say, 300 miles. 300 miles due south from Alberta is Billings, Montana. If Billings, Montana became the northernmost place that you could grow wheat for a year or two or five, you would essentially have to take a lot of land out of the CRP program. CRP program is a federal program where farmers are paid to fallow their land. They don't plant the land, they just grow grass on it. It's designed to do two things. One is to stabilize the price of wheat because wheat farmers will just simply overproduce, driving the price down. And they say that's the reason we had the crash of 1929. But those of us on this program know better than that. But it does stabilize the price of wheat because you don't produce millions of bushels of extra wheat in the winter because that land is only capable of growing so much. But you're going to have to take that land out of fallow and you're going to have to start growing wheat on it because we're going to lose a couple million acres up there in the Nodak country up in Canada. And so that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. And I got off on that because I was talking about the low Earth orbit decay. And so I applaud this technology. I want the technology to go forward. I think we need to start realizing that you can't just keep launching crap up into space and not bringing any of it back. And if there's room for startups, I don't care if they're Swedish. I'd like to see Irish. I don't care. Some guys in Ohio or something build something. And, you know, like there was a TV program with Andy Griffith on it. I think it only went one season, maybe two. And it was called Salvage One. And Salvage One, he was a former astronaut that didn't get to go to space, but he was qualified to go to space. And he ends up buying a junkyard. He takes in a lot of high-tech junk, and he makes his own spacecraft. I liked it because it had a American Motors pistol grip shifter for the throttle on the spacecraft, but he made his own spacecraft, and he ended up doing a lot of private missions for NASA, and it was called Salvage One. So you guys in Ohio or down there in Alabama, gather up all that space junk and build something and go up there and start recovering space junk. Look at what they're doing. $150 million startup. Wow. It's there to be had. All right. Big question on everyone's mind right now. What are we doing in the chat room? It's been flying. I can't keep up with all this. Is DLive up? Yes. No. Yes, it is. All right. Let's do this. Okay. I had to shut the volume off on it because it'll echo. All right, DLive is up. This is good. This is good because all you DLive listeners can head over there now. And what this will do is it will allow you to be a recipient of lemons, which I will give away. What is it, about 20 after? I'll tell you what, give me 20 minutes. Let's go 20 minutes to the top of the hour. And I will be generous. I will give away some lemons to those listeners who are over there. Let me go back to the chat monitoring. I have this chat consolidator that Restream provides us. And I can see all of the chatters, people from Twitch and YouTube and DLive. And I don't know if Foxhole is going to give me that. And let's see. Let me move my script aside here. I don't see any chatters, but I am live right now on Foxhole. Somebody tell me in the chat room how I can see chatters on Foxhole, because I really value you Foxhole people. I think it's a great idea, a fantastic layout, and I'm all for creating these other platforms where guys like me and Red Pill 78 and Patriot News and White Hat, Jordan Sather, Good Dog, quite frankly, all these people have a platform now. They're all live right now, by the way, competing with me, but that's okay. We're not competing with one another. We're competing with ignorance. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. I am the voice of the revolution, and this is where the truth freaks hang out. But, everybody has a voice. Everybody has an angle. Everybody has a talent. So now the question that everyone asks, Salvage One was awesome, wasn't it? EFOG says, Salvage One was awesome. I totally agree. It was a long time ago. I'm surprised anyone remembers it. People want to know, how is Hamas getting its rockets? I mean, I've been over there with friends have been over there, and they've handed me pieces of the rockets that blow up and splatter in the street. Now, the rockets in those days, they still had threads on both ends. They were made of pipe. They were like pipes, and they just welded fins to them and just lit the back end of it, these solid fuel rockets, and they'd launch them out of holes in the ground or with 2x4s and whatever, just to get them in the air and get them over the border and get them to smash into somebody's house or a restaurant. And so when the sirens go off or people hear them, you know what a big sewer tile is, right? They're like 8, 10 feet, 12 feet long, big concrete sections of tube, right? They're precast tubes, and they connect them all together for stormwater to get to routes. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen them on the side of the highway, right? When they're building a storm drain. Well, they had these laying on the street corners here and there. And what these are rapid readiness bomb shelters. So when these rockets come over, they don't have much ass to them. They're just, you know, about this big around and maybe 6 feet long with some fins and a cone welded onto it, and off it goes. Those were the rockets of those days. They would come over. I was talking with one of my business partners over there. I was on the phone at the time, and it sounded like the sky ripped open and this huge explosion, like, I don't know. It was crazy sounding on the phone. I said, wow, what the heck was that? And my partner said, well, that was one of the rockets that was in Jaffa. One of the rockets came over and landed in the street not far from the house and the office and just blew up. And people are used to it. I mean, they're on edge, of course, but they're not going to hide. As soon as it happens, people come out from everywhere with brooms and they sweep it up and get back to business. That's it. Feel a little sand in the hole if it hit the street and move on, because they just are not going to let Hamas change their way of life. But now these rockets are different. These rockets are more sophisticated. They're faster. They go further. They have more payload to them. The verdict is in, though. We now know that Iran is supplying these Hamas terrorists with the rockets to cripple Israel. And it wasn't really widely known. This was released by a watchdog who is tracking extremism throughout the world. On my regular Sunday program, I used to give a report at the beginning called the Religion of Peace Report. I did it for 5 years, and I just stopped doing it. I stopped doing it, I think, this last December. And the reason I stopped doing it is because it was just tearing my heart out. Every single week, hundreds and hundreds of people killed, hundreds and hundreds of people injured. And it's not just from bombing. It's from stabbing, shooting, choking, raping. It was just, I just couldn't do it anymore. But it's ongoing. It never stops. It never stops. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stated his military was successful in targeting Hamas and the Islamic terrorists in the Gaza Strip. He said the terrorist factions have paid quite the price for their aggression. Now, I know that they're calling for a ceasefire, but every time there is a ceasefire, the only thing they do is run the trucks in and reload all the rocket launching areas and begin again. And so this time, Israel's not going to let them breathe, not going to let them catch a breath. They have drones flying over all the time, infrared. They can see everything that's going on. They know these people are moving rockets by hand. It takes two guys, one on the front end, one on the back end. They run them through the streets, drop them into a hole, ignite them, and off they go. And it's low tech, but again, it is just a terror weapon. It's not designed to win a war. It's just designed to make some news. Because the Israelis have some very sophisticated tracking and targeting software. If you could probably watch some of the old films, but I'll tell you a little bit how this works. They will send guys out fully armored, of course, body armor, helmets, Kevlar helmets, and they'll be somewhat out of range. But they have the tracking radar running, and they have what's called a counterstrike unit in their unit. And these counterstrike units have rockets that are precision guidance rockets. And they're not big. They're like 3 or 4 feet long, but they're effective. And what they would wait for is, and they also have a light to medium machine gun, which means 30 caliber, 50 caliber, and 20 millimeter. Okay, that's light to medium machine gun. Not big 30 millimeter stuff. That's reserved for like aircraft, but up to that size. And this stuff is on an automated targeting system. If someone shoots a bullet, one bullet, shoots a bullet and tries to hit one of those guys, chances are they're going to miss, because it takes a heck of a sniper to go 3,000 or 4,000 feet and hit somebody. But what happens is the targeting software can track that single bullet and can shoot around right down the vapor trail of that bullet into the gun that just fired it. That's how fast. And the rockets, they're a little bit more devastating. If they shoot a mortar, which is a non-propelled grenade that just has a charge underneath it and launches it up, they don't have a long range. Maybe they can go a quarter of a mile if on a good day without any wind in its face. But most of them are powered. They're like RPGs, but they're powered in an arc. Not long distance, maybe half a mile, something like that. These targeting rockets will go right back down that smoke trail and blow that spot up where they just launched it. And it doesn't take but maybe 1 or 2 minutes. It's over, if that. It's a rapid response thing. It was originally designed to try to take out the people that just shot the rocket, because, you know, chances are they're packing up their backpacks and they're on foot anyway, or on a moped or something. But of course, what happened was UN reporters would set up a little bit from the rocket launch site, which was typically in a schoolyard with primary kids or next to a hospital or on the roof of the hospital for that matter. And they would wait for the round to come back from Israel. So they would fire the round and wait for the round to come back from Israel. And that's when they would roll the cameras. And of course, when the round from Israel would hit the top of the hospital and blow the hospital up, that's what hit the news. When the round came back and landed in the schoolyard, 12 inches away from where the original rocket was launched from, right next to the merry-go-round, the missile from Israel was on camera. And this is what was making the news, that Israel was losing the war in the court of public opinion. So now they don't do that. Now they don't go back down the path. What they do is they wait for the launch, and then the drone, which is flying at, you know, 50,000 feet, way up there, or 12,000 feet if it's really quiet, it sees the launch and it puts an infrared mark, like crosshairs, on the person, just like we do NASCAR cars. It puts a crosshair on that person and it can track that person no matter where he runs. If he gets on a motorcycle and rides away, if he ducks into a tunnel, if he goes into a house, if he gets in a car or an SUV and takes off to another site, it tracks that person. And as long as the drone is tracking that person is a target. Now, oftentimes they don't hit the person right away because he's by himself or he's with two or three people. They wait until he gets with a large group of his associates. Or even better yet, and you saw some of this, I believe it was last night. Might have been last night, it might have been the night before, you saw some of this happen, where the precision retargeting software using the drone as the forward scout was able to hit the actual tunnel where they stored the weapons. And of course, one rocket hits and 500 go off. You see this enormous fireball and it just blows a tremendous hole in the street. So they'll send over one rocket that's designed to punch down through the ground and then blow up and set off all the rockets that the Hamas has stored underground. And this is what they're doing. This is their method of going after them, and they're not letting them breathe. Now, the next step, of course, you realize, because these rockets were manufactured in Iran and shipped in, the next step is to follow that supply chain. Try to catch a truck on the road coming from Iran. Try to catch a truck coming over the border from Iran. And then follow that truck back to the factory in Iran and then hit that factory in Iran and blow it off the face of the earth. That's the strategy. You mark my words, this is what's happening. Now, a lot of people are talking about Palestinian people. They are not involved in this. Palestinian people are totally victims in this. They're not involved in Gaza in the sense that they're not doing the fighting. They're not involved in Hamas in the sense that Hamas is occupying the country and has lorded over them and taken all of their relief money. And they're really not directly involved with Israel at all either. They just want to be free. And I want them to be free. Everybody wants them to be free. The way to get the Palestinian people free, if there is such a thing as Palestinian people that live in Palestine, let's call them that, is to get rid of Hamas, to wipe them out and to stop their voice. Don't let them lord over these people. And I think the only way that that's going to happen, because they're constantly going to be replacing these people because there's a ton of money behind it, especially since Virtual Joe just wrote another big fat check to these people, is to go after Iran. You have to go after the leadership of Iran and get them out of office. And I'm not talking about Persia. I'm talking about Iran. Iran in English means Aryan. It means Aryan, like Nazi, Aryan, Adolf Hitler, Aryan. That's what Iran stands for. So Iran needs to change its name back to Persia and do away with Iran, do away with the Nazi ideology. So a lot of that's going on. We'll keep you posted. No, I'm not going to take sides. I'm not going to take the bait. I'm not talking about occupation or any of that crap. I'm just talking about nothing but the logistics of what's going on. All right. Also, kind of back in the news, as you know, me and 500,000 of my friends went to Washington, D.C. on January 6th. We were down on the other side of the Washington Monument toward the Ellipse, which is an area near the White House, where the president and, you know, others spoke. I listened to great speeches, got to meet a lot of great patriots. So much love, so much love, so much peace and happiness. It was wonderful. Yes, there were some Antifa pukes there, and there were some BLM people there, but they were very few. I saw maybe 50 of them, and we were 500,000 strong. So I really didn't think they would cause any problems, and I didn't honestly have the legs to make the march down to Congress. We stayed at another hotel, which was a good piece. It was a 35-minute walk to get there, and it was cold and crowded. And then it was another, you know, 35, 40-minute walk to get to Congress, and we decided not to go. Just too far and too many people. And when we got back to the hotel, we realized what had happened. Ashley Babbitt had been murdered in cold blood. And so Nightly Edition came, the news, and I went out on the sidewalk, and I made a statement. And I said it's a rotten shame that Ashley Babbitt was murdered in cold blood. She wasn't hurting anyone. She was unarmed. Of course, they tried to sell me on this crap that there was an assault, that there was a mob, that there was an insurrection. They used all kinds of words, storming. And I said, look, there wasn't any storming, not by us. I mean, we were invited, but there was no storming. And they just tried to sell me on it, and I wasn't buying. But there's no doubt that some of the rioters at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th were violent. They were, but they were in disguise. They weren't us. It was them. Some actually broke windows and doors to get in, but the rest had permission. Oh, yeah, you've seen the video. Yeah, you have. You saw the video. Well, I saw some of these videos on the sidewalk outside the hotel, because the people that took the videos were staying at the same hotel that I was. So I've been telling you about it, but I haven't had access to the footage. Now everyone has seen it. According to a report at American Greatness, that wasn't CNN. Nope, wasn't even Fox News. Nope, nope, not MSNBC. Nope, American Greatness. I'll leave the link in my newsletter when I send it out tonight. You could check it out on your own. The video shows United States Capitol Police officers speaking, not yelling, speaking, collaborating with several January 6th protesters, not rioters, but protesters, including Jacob Chansley. Now, I met Jacob a couple of years ago in Pine Top, Arizona. He is a character. But he's harmless. He is harmless as a June bug. Maybe about as crazy as a June bug. Not really, not really. He's just, he considers himself kind of a patriotic shaman, okay? He likes to be where the action is, and that's why he was at this conference that I was at. And others, of course. I wasn't the only one there, but he's harmless, absolutely harmless. But he was in this video. And one of the officers was identified as Keith Robichaud, who appears to tell the group, at least this is what I heard, that they have to behave. Quote, we're not against. You need to show us. No attacking. No assault. Remain calm. Close quote. Now, Chansley, who's the guy that was wearing the, you know, the buffalo horns with the red, white, and blue face paint, who then has a microphone, says, this has to be peaceful. We have the right to peacefully assemble. And everything I saw from him on all the other videos, he was peaceful. He was kind of walking around, looking at stuff, went up to the pulpit of power, and really didn't do anything. President Trump at his rally earlier in the day had urged his supporters to protest peacefully. Yes, he did, because I was there. And that's exactly what we did. Explained American greatness, and I quote, "The video directly contradicts what government prosecutors allege in a complaint filed January 8th against Chansley, Robichaud, and other officers, calmed the protesters somewhat, and directed them to leave the area from the same way they had entered. That isn't true. Chansley approached Officer Robichaud and screamed, among other things, that this was their house and that they were there to take the Capitol and to get congressional leaders." I didn't hear him say that. The report said Chansley later was seen going into the Senate chambers and leading several protesters in prayer. Oh, how violent. How violent. Chansley's facing charges of trespassing and disorderly conduct, and right now he is in solitary confinement, along with, I think, 22 other rioters. 22 hours a day they are in private facilities, which is the same way as saying solitary confinement. They're trying to break them. They're trying to turn them. But you're not going to turn a patriot. Never going to happen. It's been tried for hundreds of years. American Greatness said it got the video from RMG News, and it reportedly is part of a longer video that has not been released yet. Oh, won't that be fun? Gateway Pundit said, based on the video, police invited several protesters into the U.S. Capitol that day. Several of these same protesters were later charged by overzealous prosecutors and smeared by the press. Oh, that's putting it lightly. That's very, very lightly. Oh, it's time, isn't it? It's past time. Okay, let's do it. I'm going to go over here to DLive. Hang on a second. I got to load the lemon tree here. It loads at 50 lemons per load. So I think tonight, because this is the month of my birthday, yes, the 27th of this month, I change age. So I'll be an older man when I go down on Memorial Day weekend to meet with General Flynn and other speakers down there. Sidney Powell, Jordan Sather's going to be there. Zach with Red Pill 78 is going to be there. I know Jordan. I've met him face to face. We were on a panel together at Contact in the Desert. And I've been on Zach's program, Red Pill 78. Magnificent. He needs to really be next to Tucker, don't you think? He needs the space. Yeah, he is that good. He is that good. All right, let's go ahead and spread these rewards. And we'll just see who our lucky five listeners are out there. It just takes a second. And in fact, it takes 30 seconds for this to happen. And about 1 second. No, 10 seconds left. Here we go. So this is the two-hour format. We take a break at the top of the hour for about 4 minutes and let the station, which is freedomslips.com, because we are broadcasting also on audio through Revolution Radio, also being carried by TalkStream Live out to many AM stations out there across the country. It's the number one listener-supported talk radio network in America, maybe in the world, and you could help. All of this, be generous. Use some of the money that Virtual Joe has sent you and support the very movement that's trying to remove him and set the nation right. Okay, let's see what we got. Wow. Steve Y62, he cleaned up. What is that? 60.4 lemons. That's a haul. This is real cryptocurrency, folks. And let's see, Vonnie Kinsey, 35.1. James Bright, 25.6. T-Mant is 20.6. And Big D, 1955. Happens to be the same year I was born. Is there a coincidence there? 17.3. Thank you guys so much for being part of the audience over there on DLive.TV. You can find me over there, DLive.TV. And look for me, Brooks Agnew. Everything is Brooks Agnew, even though the brand name is America Free Radio. It's just easier that way. Thank you all for being there. Thanks for contributing to the chat room as well. And you people that are listening on YouTube, you have an amazing tool at your disposal. It's called Top Chat. It's right down the bottom of your chat stream there. Is a little box with a dollar sign. And you click on that, it's going to prompt you to put a dollar amount in there. And you could put, I think, $2.99 and up. And any contributions there go into a separate account. I don't spend it. It is growing toward a $60,000 goal that we have set to run a GoFundMe project to raise the money for the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. As you know, it takes about $30,000 to successfully run a GoFundMe campaign. It takes about an extra $30,000 in additional marketing if you want to reach seven figures. So we're going to try to raise the deposit for the ship, which is about $1.5 million. We think that we can reach the 40 million fans that we have, 40 million enthusiasts that want to see this expedition take place. It's expensive. It's about $3.5 million. If you want to see the paperwork, I'll be happy to show it to you. I am making nothing off of this. In fact, I am by far the biggest contributor, having put in over $25,000 of my own dollars toward it. So when we get to $60,000, we will pull the trigger with the GoFundMe management company, and we will launch the effort to raise the deposit for the ship. When we do that, the popularity of this expedition is going to go, I don't want to use the word viral, it's going to go epic. It's going to go epic. Yes, this shirt is, it really is sweet, isn't it? I got it at Dick's. I just happened to be shopping there. It is technically a fishing shirt, but you know, when you're in your second third of life, which occurs at age 60, you're supposed to stay out of the sun. Well, I don't listen very well, but I do wear a hat when I golf, and I wear these really cool. These are very thin. They're not hot in the sun at all. Take a break now.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We'll be right back. Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, while we were at break, I figured out how to turn the chat room on at Foxhole, so I'll be watching you guys as well. So glad to be broadcasting live now through seven platforms, including the indomitable Revolution Radio through freedomslips.com. And before the break, somebody noticed my shirt. My shirt is what's known as a UV blocking shirt. So it's designed to protect the skin from direct sunlight, and it wicks any moisture away. So it's a great golf shirt. It's a great biker shirt. I can't wait to test it out when it gets to 90 this weekend. It's supposed to be 90 degrees. I'm a little upset with the weatherman. I just was speaking his praises the other day. He's doing a great job scheduling the rain during the week, scheduling beautiful, nice weekend, 70 degrees. But, you know, now, you know, we're supposed to get some low 80s for a while. And somehow he just skipped over that and went right to the 90s. So that's where we are. Anyway, I like the shirt. I've now bought about three or four of them, so you're probably going to see more of them. They're extremely comfortable, but they don't make you look thin at all. No, they're big and blousy, and the pattern doesn't make you look svelte at all, but they're so comfortable. And when you hit your second third, you know, the second third between 60 and age 120, it's all about comfort. And I don't know anybody that's older than 120. Because our generation hasn't got there yet, but I'm only a third of the way through. And so I'm going to be here for a while with you and my friends. And yeah, thanks so much for the great compliments. Freedom says, how are my patriots doing tonight? Mr. Brooks is badass, American patriot for all who believe and want to hear the truth of our world. And no, half-breed, I'm not taking the bike to Texas. to the Patriot Voice event in Dallas. I'm taking the airplane, and not my plane, American Airlines airplane. And this is a, you know, it's a fundraiser. So these are, this is a, you know, $500 a plate deal, but I know the money goes to a good place. And I want to see conservatives and patriots get elected all up and down. I want district attorneys. I want county court clerks. I want governors and secretaries of state. I want them all to be conservatives. We need to remove 100% of the Democrats from office. I think that we need about a 10-year moratorium against Democrats. What do you think? Just a 10-year moratorium. No more walking in lockstep. So next story really quick. Batteries not included. Yeah, it seems that one of the major objectives of Virtual Joe and his gang of criminals, and I guess maybe all Democrat politicians, if you get down to it, is to dismantle everything that built this nation and made it great. And, of course, to spend us into oblivion without acknowledging any consequence for their actions. The one warped initiative that may end up being the most painful is the push to shut off the energy spigot and somehow replace it with fairy dust and unicorn farts. Yes, I'm talking about the fantasy that green renewable energy can replace our current efficient and abundant fuel sources like coal, oil, and gas. I think eventually we do have to find another fuel supply, but it isn't going to be solar. It's not going to be wind because it doesn't always sunshine and the wind doesn't always blow. I think helium fusion is the way to go, but we're a decade at least away from making that happen because I think it's going to happen on the moon. I don't think it's going to happen on the earth. Now, these myopic doom and gloomers, they've been out there for a long time, Al Gore, the fear that we will reach, you know, peak oil soon, that we're going to run out, that somehow we're going to pump the last drop out of the oil, out of the earth. We're getting close. I'd say we have about 150, maybe 200-year fuel supply. I mean, do you care? I care. I do. I don't want to just greed up the world and then, you know, what do the people do 200 years from now? I would rather the people 200 years from now say, hey, we really owe it. Let's put a statue up for those guys back there in the 2020s that that created this new fuel supply, and now we can use oil for what it was meant to be used for, plastic. And we can make clothes out of it and drugs out of it and lenses for our eyes and, you know, soles for the shoes and tires for our cars. We don't have to burn it in our gas tank, and it will last 1,000 years if we do that. Now, this theory about peak oil has been around since 1956. I was wrapped up in it, too. I was one of the early inventors of algae fuels and all of that. I built a biodiesel plant myself, so I know all about this. It's tough to do. Feedstocks are very tough to manage. It's a tenuous thing to be able to manage the feedstock to your own fuel plant. But somehow we keep finding massive reserves of oil and gas. Of course, we're using HARP technology to do what I call earth tomography. I'm one of the inventors of it in 1983, helped invent ground probing radar. It's now done with a lot more power, same frequencies, but a lot more power. And they can look deeper into the earth, and that's how these very, very large and deep reserves have been found. And of course, you know, we remain attached to our dirty power grid because we know that wind isn't always going to blow and the sun's not always going to shine. And so people have asked the question, and I actually heard it the other day because I was talking to some folks in Hawaii, and they have solar farms in Hawaii. They do, and the sun shines. They're pretty close to the equator, so it shines pretty much as much as it's going to shine anywhere else on Earth, only more. But the issue is it shines at the wrong time. Hawaiians and the people in the Hawaiian Islands have not adjusted their lifestyle to the cycle of the solar panels. So the solar panels are creating their peak power at about noon to 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then, of course, the sun gets a little bit further over in the horizon and it doesn't put out as much energy. And so they don't collect as much, so they don't generate as much. But as it turns out, about 4 or 5 o'clock is when Hawaiians want their energy. They want to start, you know, turning the air conditioning on to cool the house down a little bit before they go to eat, or, you know, they want to, they need the energy more when the sun is not there. And so they decided to try battery backup. I mean, people ask the question, why not battery backup? Why doesn't that extend the power that we built up during the day? And the issue is that it doesn't work. If it were the solution, we'd have net zero emissions already. It's been the problem all along for supposed green energy. How to store enough power to maintain electricity when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, like at night or on a rainy day. And this was proven in 2018 when Tesla produced the largest battery cluster storage unit for a wind farm in South Australia. There was a company 2 miles away from me that took over the old Philip Morris plant. I really wanted that plant. I tried to buy it, but it's out of my range. Couldn't get anybody to go in with me on it and buy it because it's a beautiful plant. It's just a white elephant. You can't. There's no plant like it on the eastern seaboard, so there's no way to appraise it, so there's no way to borrow the money to buy it. So unless you have $50 million laying around, it's just not possible. But as it turns out, this guy in Sweden did have the money, and he did buy the building, and he did put a big mega battery storage company in there. They made shipping container-sized batteries for, like, the power stations that you see, the substations you see around town. And they went broke. They went broke in a year. As it turns out, according to Sky News Australia, this massive battery storage unit that Tesla built would only be capable of powering the region, not the country, just the region, for an estimated 3 minutes. Yeah, off peak, maybe for as much as a whole hour. Now, physicist and engineer Mark Mills, who's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, explained that it would take Tesla's production plant in Nevada, which is, by the way, the largest battery manufacturing facility, 500 years to produce enough batteries to power the United States for a single day. In fact, it is estimated that New York City alone would have to spend $3 trillion on batteries just to store enough energy for a 70-day period. That's twice the metro area's entire gross domestic product. But do you think this will deter the New York elitists? No, of course not. Money be damned, results be damned, reality be damned. David Wojcik writes in Town Hall that New York City will soon be the home to the world's biggest industrial-scale battery system. It's designed to back up the city's growing reliance on intermittent renewable electricity, wind farms, at 400 megawatt hours. This cluster of batteries will be more than triple the aforementioned 129 megawatt hours world leader in Australia. However, the city is going to need more than one cluster, like a lot more. Every summer, the city is hit with one or more, shall we say, you know, still periods when the wind doesn't blow. Have you ever been in New York during this time? Whew, man, talk about a hot place. It is burning up these high pressure systems. They call them Bermuda highs. They just park over New York. And these highs, they often last for a week. And the crime goes through the roof and no babies are hatched. I mean, nothing happens in New York City. It's just stagnant, stagnant, stinking, hot, sweaty air. And there's no wind because the wind's not blowing 5 miles an hour. That's it. The wind turbines require about 30 miles an hour sustained winds to operate at full power and a minimum of 10 miles an hour just to turn the blades at all. And now you know why the pilgrims didn't arrive in summer. No, they always arrived in the spring, because that's when the wind blew. That's when the ships would cut through the water. The last thing in the world you want to be is stuck out on the water with no wind, right? When wind is your power. So let's do the math. We love to do the math on this program. Something the leftist green warriors apparently don't like because, well, math is racist. Let's just face it. Maybe they have, and they're just so determined to get rid of us planet-killing fossil fuel idiots that they just don't care. So New York City requires about 13 megawatts per hour. Now, I worked in a plant. We consumed about 33 to 35 megawatts per hour. That's a lot. That's a lot of energy. We made cars. We had to order the power an hour ahead of time from a TVA just to let them know how much coal to burn. So if there's a little to no wind for 7 days, this equates to about 168 hours that they're going to need battery power, right? Do the math. 13,000 megawatts times 168 hours equals 2,184,000 megawatt hours. That's 10 to the 6th hours, okay? Or 10 to the 12th. Remember, the plan is to produce a single massive 400 megawatt battery cluster. More math. Okay, here we go. What do we have? We had 2,184,000 megawatt hours. So I was right. 284 million, million watt hours. And we're going to divide this by 400 megawatt hours. So that means that we're going to need 5,460 clusters of 400 megawatts each. And I forgot to mention that each 400 megawatt hour cluster costs about $1.5 million per megawatt hour. Okay. So it's about $1.50 a watt hour, which is about right. We actually build ours for about $1.35, but they're smaller. They're smaller. It's about right. It's not exorbitant. So that's $600 million per cluster. And there's 5,460 clusters. Now you do that math, and there's the $3 trillion. So I'm all for innovation. I own an electric vehicle company. I know what I'm talking about. I'm all for innovation. But batteries are not the answer at this scale, nor is the sole reliance on wind or solar. I doubt we're going to have much success convincing them, because all they're going to say is, well, then we'll just use less electricity. Oh, really? So no more Bitcoin, no more cell phones, no power to run cell phone towers, no air conditioning. Yeah, and how is that going to go for your date? How about no electric water heaters? There's a big power consumer right there, huh? How long would you last in New York without showering every day? You wouldn't last any longer than Bombay lasts. Yeah, I'm just telling you, we have our lifestyle. This is the greatest country the world has ever known. I'm not saying go blindly into the future and burn oil for 200 years until it's gone and we're rubbing two sticks together to make fire. But I know that wind and solar is not the answer. There are other answers. Maybe the ETs have the answer. Maybe UFO technology. But I'm pretty sure there's enough energy sitting on the moon to power Earth, or at least the United States, for 10,000 years. Now that's a fuel supply, and it's clean. No radiation, no pollution whatsoever. Come on, people. Quit lockstepping yourself into the sewer pipe, and let's get this together. You're right, Steve. Batteries are not green. I know. I bought a couple hundred thousand of them over the last few years, a couple hundred thousand dollars worth, not a couple hundred thousand batteries. That'd be a lot of money. They didn't last. I mean, about two packs of my prototypes are still lasting because I have proprietary technology that makes them last longer. But the rest of the batteries ended up boat anchors. Yeah, we trashed them. We tested and tested and tested, and we ran through pallets and pallets and pallets of batteries, and not the little bitty batteries like you're talking about. I don't even have one of those. I don't have a 16850, but it's a little bit bigger than a AA battery. We don't use those. We use the big 300-amp-hour bricks. Yeah, that's a serious battery. All right, let's talk a little bit about stocks because everybody's feeling it. Everybody. I looked at my portfolio just a few minutes ago on the phone, and I don't want to look at it. I don't want to look at it. I'm not thinking about it. I'm releasing. I'm going to do something else. I'll get some ice cream or something. I'm not going to think about it. But after a quiet day of late session U.S. sell-off was the main theme, and that was yesterday. The S&P 500 fell back in the last couple of hours of trading, most of it in the last 15 minutes. S&P went down a little bit, but it was just the stocks here and there. It wasn't like the total Dow sell-off, but the Dow is just indicator stocks. I'm talking about the individual stocks like lithium. And I'm invested in a company that owns Candy Crush, you know, like online gaming. Believe it or not, there's a publicly traded company that owns that stuff, the people that work there, and it's a big thing. Well, lots of people have been playing online gaming because they're not working, because they're just hanging out, you know, living on Virtual Joe's money, my money. You're living on my money, and I resent it, by the way. But anyway, the company is making very good money because lots of people are playing Candy Crush, and there are in-game purchases, and those purchases make my stock go up. So thank you very much. So on the earnings side, Walmart rose 2.11%. No kidding, because they were like the only big box store open. And let's see, ESG has been part of a minimum wage increase in recent times, and maybe we're seeing a perfect storm of this where Virtual Joe is competing against employers for people. And employers are suffering through about a 13% absentee rate nationwide. It's not good. It's not good. People have to pay a lot of money to convince people to come back to work because they're perfectly happy sitting at home on $630 a week. And if they have any kids, they're about to get another $600 a month. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. In other overnight news, the reports are that the EU lawmakers will mostly vote yes on the motion to freeze the comprehensive agreement on investment with China tomorrow. This is a big deal because they will demand that China lift sanctions before any progress is made on the deal, which took 7 years to negotiate. Oh, yeah, you didn't know China had sanctions against them, did you? In terms of the latest on the pandemic, India's Serum Institute has said that it will prioritize making vaccines for India and would delay deliveries to other nations, and the World Health Organization-backed COVAX initiative until probably Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas. Meanwhile, Singapore has decided to increase the time between the two vaccine doses, give people a chance to recover a little bit. And by the way, you should know if you are an employer or you work for an employer that OSHA has made an announcement that if the company requires you to get the jab, they either say it's a term of employment, you have to have it or you can't work here, or they imply that you won't be promoted if you don't get it, or they imply that you'll be the first to be laid off if you don't get it, or they imply that you're not going to be allowed to take vacation unless you get it and then take 14 days quarantine before you come back and all that stuff. That is setting them up for a violation of 29 CFR, which is the section that deals with OSHA. And OSHA says officially that if the company implies or requires you to get the jab and you get sick and you miss a day of work, that missed day of work is a recordable. And if you own a company and you pay general liability insurance or workman compensation insurance and you have a recordable, your rates are going to go up. And if you have a decent sized payroll, $1 million a month, $2 million a month, something like that, jumping that little bit from, say, 8% to what, 8.5%, 9%, it's a serious amount of money. So you employers better think twice about requiring your employees to get the jab, because if they get sick and they miss a day of work because of the jab, and it's already happened where I work, but the company doesn't require it. People are just getting it and then saying, I'm sick, I can't come to work. It doesn't show up as a recordable to that company because they don't require it. But if your company does require it, even implies that they will give you privileges if you get it, then the company is liable for your illness as a result. So, by the way, running through yesterday's data, U.S. housing releases saw a slight miss relative to expectations. I wonder why. It couldn't be that a 2x4 costs $10. Housing starts are down to an annualized rate of 1.56 million in April. And that's significant because they were expecting to get 1.7. Building permits came in at 1.7 versus 1.77. Construction may have been held back in recent weeks due to higher material costs. Duh. There was also possibly some weather effects. Nah, didn't really have any effect. Everything goes on no matter what. And then there's the dollar. Oh my gosh, what's going on with the dollar? If the value of the U.S. dollar is falling as quickly as the CPI suggests, Consumer Price Index, why would any country want to invest in U.S. bonds? And you know what? That's a damn good question. It does threaten to cause a major shakeup. Because, you know, Virtual Joe and his band of criminals, they want to keep writing those checks. They want to keep buying votes, right? Well, they're doing it with money that we don't have, because they're not taking in the tax revenue because people aren't working and companies aren't expanding. They're moving out of the country again. So if that happens, and it's going to, that means that Virtual Joe is going to have to borrow some money. And how's he going to borrow the money if nobody's buying? Anybody that can connect these dots is going to be selling U.S. treasuries. I don't own any, but if I did, I'd be selling them. And the problem is there are a lot of U.S. treasuries to be sold. Now, here's the deal. When these treasuries go up for sale, the problem is the surplus of money, okay? Whenever you print a lot of money, it's always a goods shortage, because the Federal Reserve can print all the money they want, and they do all the time. But they don't print products to buy with the money. That's why no one has any inventory. You can't buy a motor. You can't buy a motorcycle. You can't buy a sailboat. You can't buy a TV. You can't buy a refrigerator. You can't buy nothing. So we have all this money being printed, and it's being helicoptered out to people. We're not producing a lot. People are sitting at home cashing unemployment checks. And this is a tax. This is an inflation tax. This is a Virtual Joe and his band of criminals tax, whatever you want to call it. But when Virtual Joe says, don't worry, only people that make over $400,000 a year are going to have to pay higher taxes to fund all these programs, he is lying to you. Because every American is going to pay the inflation tax, all of us. And it's going to hit the middle class and the poor the hardest. Because you know what a person who's well off is, right? If you're new to this program, maybe you don't. But if you're well off, you go to your local supermarket, your local grocery store, Harris Teeter, Kroger, whatever. And you fill up your cart with the things that you want. You buy name brand. You don't buy the store brand. You buy name brand. You buy name brand bacon, name brand beans, name brand milk. You buy name brand cheese and butter, $6, $7, $8 a pound. And when you get to the checkout, you might give your little whatever the discount number is, so they can track, you know, what orange juice you buy and when. And you end up paying the bill and you don't look at the receipt. You just put the receipt in the bag and off you go home, and you never even have an increased heartbeat about it. That's well off. That's well off. Now, you're not hoarding. You're not going to the grocery and spending $500 or $600 on groceries. It's an average bill, $100, $200, $220, something like that. But you don't even look at the receipt because it is what it is. I'm going to have Häagen-Dazs ice cream. I'm not buying the store brand ice cream. I like the store brand Brussels sprouts and broccoli sprouts, though. Those are good. Those are really good. But other than that, you know, I shop for what I like. Now, if you look at how much the cost of living has gone up, measured by the Consumer Price Index in the first 4 months of this year, first 4 months, okay, you're going to be very surprised. It's a rather harmless 2%, you say. It's nothing to worry about, 2%. But remember, Earth Explorers, that's 4 months. You got to annualize that, okay? You annualize that, and we have consumer prices rising at 6% annually. And even that will evade most mathematicians. You take a look at the instantaneous rate of change. That's the slope, but we're not talking about a straight line. We're talking about a curved line. It's a little Gaussian, so just hang with me here. The slope isn't linear. It's an accelerating curve, okay? If you extrapolate the trend of the first 4 months of this year for the entire year, the result is pretty close to a 20% increase in consumer prices in 2021. That means that your dollar, today's dollar, is going to be worth 80 cents by Christmas. That is Virtual Joe's economy compared to Trump's economy. What is Virtual Joe doing to make this happen? He is printing money like there's no tomorrow. There are only two reasons that a person begins mindlessly running up their credit card. You know what those are, don't you? Oh, yeah. They either are very close to filing bankruptcy or they are expecting to win the lottery. And I doubt very much that we are going to be winning anything. I want to know why the geniuses making these policies don't know this. Just listen to this program. Get a clue, people. These are the same guys that told us not to worry about the subprime mortgage market. You remember that? You remember that early on? Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke came out and said, don't worry about subprime. It's contained. And that turned out to be a bunch of horse crap. Mortgage-backed securities are the foundation stones of American banking. And these stones turned out to be nothing but lies, all underwritten by Standard & Poor's. Well, now they're saying, don't worry about inflation. It's transitory. Inflation is as transitory now as the subprime market was contained in 2008. Believe it. And by the way, you know what subprime means, right? It means people with no credit and no income were being given mortgages to buy houses, including income properties like rentals. And the reality was that these borrowers did exactly what they were expected to do. They stopped making their payments. They had no skin in the game because Clinton made it so people didn't have to have a down payment to buy a rental property. But I digress. Hold on a second. In today's reality, this inflation crisis is not only going to be worse than the financial crisis during the Obama regime, it's going to be worse than the panic-demic itself. Because Virtual Joe's cure is what's going to kill the economy, not the disease. And after all, isn't that the plan? The global syndicate is ancient and knows how to topple nations without engaging the military. And I've been saying for 2 years that the actions being taken against America are acts of war that must be met with a military response. Where is the military? Well, They're busy tucking their tails and staring at the ground as Garrison's Gestapo marches in lockstep down the halls of the Pentagon looking for any signs of a patriot. Now, the battle I describe in my book, Charm of Favor, is exactly what is going down right now in a city of 2.9 million people called the Pentagon. Maybe we don't need to be asking, where's the military? Maybe we need to be asking, where's the courage? Where's Captain America? I get it. I get it. I know where you guys are coming from. I know where your heart is. You feel powerless, but we're not powerless. I'm going to Dallas on Memorial Day weekend to meet with General Flynn and others, and Jordan Sather is going to be there speaking. Zach from Red Pill 78 is going to be there speaking. This is the Brain Trust. This is the Patriot Trust. We are doing something. We're putting our money where our mouth is. Yes, it's $500 a plate. It's not cheap, but it is going to go to a good cause. This is how it has to happen. We have to take back the House. It has to be done. We have to take back the House, and we have to dominate the Senate, and oh my God, we've got to get Virtual Joe and his band of criminals out of the White House. And I don't think we can last till 2022. In fact, I'll go so far to say, if we don't fix 2020, there isn't going to be a 2022. Now, that being said, the dominoes are up, and they're wiggling a little bit. Arizona, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, we don't know which, but one day, one's going to fall against the other, and then on and on and on, and the dominoes are going to fall, and Virtual Joe will be gone. Will it be bad for America? Well, it will be bad for part of America, but it will be lovely for the rest of America, because America will be back and Marxism will be dead. Now, I want to cover one other story. I want to get about, okay, we've got about 20 minutes, and that's enough time to cover this story, because we've talked about epigenetics before, but I want to show you that the message has been out there, and it's been out there for you to hear. You remember, I have mentioned a movie from time to time called The Last Mimsy. Anybody in any of the chat rooms see The Last Mimsy? Anybody in Foxhole, have you seen The Last Mimsy? You could just put it in the chat room down there. I'll watch this one and that one. Yeah, Let's hope the dominoes take over the Dominion. Very good, Baba Sui. Susie, nice play on words. I like that. You should be a writer. Oh, you are a writer. I know you are. Absolutely. Okay, The Last Mimsy. I mean, the acting is poor, except for the little girl and the science teacher and his wife in the movie. Kudos for rocking a poor script. Oh, yeah, the screenplay is punchy at best. And the music had only one point where the rubber met the road. The director was a kind of newbie, but the storyline was awakening. And the true story of the movie was actually narrated by Rhiannon Lee Rhine, who was the 7-year-old who played Emma Wilder. And she was actually nominated for the Saturn Award and the Young Artist Award for her performance. And maybe her performance is what makes the movie worth seeing. But Emma becomes telepathically connected to a stuffed rabbit whose name is Mimsy. And she learns other information from it, and she acknowledges it as her teacher. Now, the epic storyline, as far as, you know, it's in the future, vaccines and epigenetics have corrupted the human genome to the point that it no longer works to protect humans from simple diseases. The race is headed for extinction unless they can go back in time and get a sample of the original human gene code. So the Mimsy was created. Oh, thank you, Trucker Will. A very generous donation toward the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition in Top Chat, in YouTube. This is really great. I so appreciate that. So Mimsy was created as a sophisticated stuffed rabbit that also served as a DNA capture device. And there are a few of them fabricated, and they're sent back in time to various ages in a time travel toolbox of sorts. And the plan was to have the rabbit kind of speak to a little girl who might be receptive to its call for help. Of course, it would take an engineering mind to build the Star Bridge to get the Mimsy back to the future with the sample. And that's where Chris O'Neill, as the 10-year-old Noah, her brother in the movie, comes in and becomes an amazing engineer. Long story short, back in the future setting, Mimsy is returned to the future. The humans are finally able to restore their DNA and abandon their then necessary protective suits, and more importantly, repair the mental corruption that stripped most of them of their feelings toward each other. The teacher ends the story time, and the children levitate and fly home. The world in their time has become a beautiful place where humanity has integrated into the reconstructed ecosystems. Well, we seem to be following the storyline. Scientists have figured out how to modify CRISPR's basic architecture to extend its reach beyond the genome and into what's known as the epigenome. Proteins, small molecules that latch onto DNA and control when and where these genes are switched on or off. Now, in nature, that is done by, well, it's done by us. We do it. Our consciousness does it. This is why when you get identical twins at birth, in a very short amount of time, one begins to diverge. And by the time they reach 30, one looks like a hand and the other one still looks like this. You get the picture. They eat the same food. They're exposed to the same sunlight, the same temperature. They wear the same clothes, go to the same food, sleep in the same house, for crying out loud. And yet they genetically diverge. It's because part of the environment that influences those gene pairs is the soul, is the spirit of the person. They are two different individuals with two different mindsets, two different emotional sets, two different conscious addresses, and that is affecting the gene code. Well, in a paper published last month in the journal Cell, researchers at UC San Francisco and the Whitehead Institute described a novel CRISPR-based tool called CRISPR-Off, which allows scientists to switch off almost any gene in human cells without making a single edit to the genetic code. This is the way messenger RNA works. This is the way messenger RNA works, which is the core mechanism of the vaccines that are being marketed right now to fight the pandemic, the made-for-TV virus. Researchers also show that once a gene is switched off, it remains inert in the cell's descendants, and it stays that way for hundreds of generations. The kids don't bring it back unless it's switched back on with a complementary tool called CRISPR-On, which was described in the paper. Now, because the epigenome plays a central role in many diseases, from viral infections to cancer, and I'm a living proof that this works because my life was saved by this technology. I'm one of the lab rats for this technology. One day it will lead to powerful epigenetic therapies, and since this approach doesn't involve any DNA edits, it's likely to be safer than conventional CRISPR therapeutics, which have been known to cause unwanted and potentially harmful effects to the genome. Though genetic and cellular therapies are the future of medicine, there are potentially safety concerns about permanently changing the genome, which is why they're trying to come up with other ways to use CRISPR to treat diseases. Conventional CRISPR is equipped with two pieces of molecular hardware that make it an effective gene editing tool. One component is a DNA snipping enzyme, which gives CRISPR the ability to alter DNA sequences. And the other is a homing device that can be programmed to zero in on any DNA sequence of interest, imparting precise control over where edits are made. My brother was chairman of physiology at Johns Hopkins for a long time, and he told me over the phone one time, "We will comb again," which means they had found the gene that controls the growth of hair. Yeah, can you imagine having your CRISPR-on pill that you take and poof, here's your full head of hair back that you had when you were 18 years old? Tell me what that pill would be worth. Anyway, the new tool targets a particular epigenetic feature known as DNA methylation, which is one of many molecular parts of the epigenome. When DNA is methylated, a small chemical tag known as a methyl group, this is a CH3, carbon and three hydrogens, a methyl group, is affixed to the DNA, which silences nearby genes, although DNA methylation occurs naturally, as I said, in all mammalian cells. CRISPR-off offers scientists unprecedented control over this process. Another tool described in the paper called CRISPR-on does exactly the opposite thing. Now, we have a simple tool that can do this. The question is, should we? Well, based on previous work by a group in Italy, the researchers were confident that CRISPR-off would be able to silence specific genes, but they suspected that some 30% of human genes would be unresponsive to the new tool. It is true. I had to undergo genetic screening to make sure that I had the protein that would respond to the treatment. I did have it, and I had stage 4 melanoma. Wasn't expected to be here by now, for sure. Gone a long time. They went in and edited that and ramped up my immune system to go after the then corrupted cancer cell. The lesions went away in a matter of days, weeks, they were cleared off. It took me about 4 months to get over the effects of doing all this and about a year to get over the fatigue and gain my weight back. But I'm cancer-free 6 years now, so it does work. And this was experimental. I just took a chance. It was worth it. I survived, as did all but one of the 149 people in the trial, which is incredible success. Now that drug is known as Nivomulab or Nivo, and it powers a very powerful line of drugs used to fight cancer. And it does it this way. This is how it's done. It goes after that protein. All right, let's talk a little bit about StarForge. It's a very cool project. I was going to put the video in, but I didn't have enough time to get it set up for you. A team including Northwestern University astrophysicists has developed the most realistic high-resolution 3D simulation of star formation. Yeah. And the result is a visually stunning, mathematically driven marvel that allows viewers to float around in a colorful gas cloud in 3D space while watching twinkling stars emerge. It's called StarForge. It's a computational framework. It's the first to simulate an entire gas cloud 100 times more massive than previously possible and full of vibrant colors where stars are born. It also is the first simulation to simultaneously model star formation, evolution, and dynamics while accounting for stellar feedback, including jets, radiation, wind, and nearby supernova activity, while other simulations have incorporated individual types of stellar feedback. It takes a tremendous supercomputer to crunch all these numbers, and it is, I think, built on the premise that these gigantic plasma clouds in space, we used to think in terms of accretion disks. I don't really have an accretion disk here on my desk or I would show you, but if you think of an accretion disk as something like a giant gaseous Milky Way galaxy, and it is revolving very slowly but has a tremendous amount of mass in it. And what happens is the mass begins to attract itself toward the center. And of course, as it does, in order to conserve momentum, it spins faster and faster and faster, kind of like an ice skater, you know, when she pulls her arms in when she's skating. I don't know how they don't explode myself, but they spin pretty fast. And then what happens is inside the cloud are other eddies, things that are spinning inside the big spin. And these smaller spins form solar systems, the center of it becoming the sun, and then coagulations in what would be a Fibonacci layout of orbits around that sun turn into planets. We don't really have any evidence of this happening. We don't have any snapshots of this happening in space, and we haven't been around long enough to watch it happen in space. So we model it. And we model it, and we model it, and we model it, and we've tried to build, you know, gas models and plasma models of it, and we can't seem to duplicate it. Can't seem to get this flat accretion disk kind of shape that forms solar systems. What we have been able to do with this StarForge is create a plasma cloud. Now, the plasma cloud is very dynamic, and it is loaded with energy. Absolutely loaded with energy in the third dimension. And what happens, evidently, is that there are electromagnetic discharges, like gigantic interplanetary lightning bolts, go blasting through this plasma cloud. And along the, let's just call it the turning points, the points of opposition in the lightning bolt. Whenever a lightning bolt makes a turn, it's because of a charge one way or another. What happens is this matter comes together in this tremendous amount of energy and forms a star. And we do have snapshots of this occurring in space. We do have giant nebula, and we have seen a string of pearls of stars in that nebula, and we have seen the remnants of these gigantic electromagnetic bolts. And, you know, we're talking about a lightning bolt that could go from, say, our sun all the way to Alpha Centauri. Yeah, I mean, like light years, incredible distances. And it proves to us that there's a lot more to the universe than what we think. It's not just gravity. We don't just have, you know, moon close to the Earth in a double orbit around the sun. I hesitate to say that the moon is orbiting around the Earth, because technically speaking, it really isn't. It's orbiting around the sun. It's just in a 28-day orbit around the Earth. But the sun actually exerts twice as much gravity against the moon as the Earth does. So technically speaking, the moon is in orbit around the sun, and the Earth is in orbit around the sun, and they happen to be in the same orbit, same ellipse around the sun. But we're not just talking about gravity here. We're not just talking about, you know, getting halfway from the Earth to the moon and picking up the moon's gravity and letting the moon pull us the rest of the way. We're talking about an electromagnetic relationship that extends beyond that. Billions and billions of miles, impossible distances for gravity. There is no solution in the standard model for that kind of gravity. It just doesn't exist. There isn't that kind of mass available. Lots of gas, but there isn't kind of mass. So it has to be an electromagnetic relationship. And that's why this StarForge is so encouraging. And I'm gonna see if I can get the model and run it on my big machine here. It's already helped the team discover a crucial new insight into star formation. When the researchers ran the simulation without accounting for the jets, the stars ended up too large, so they had to account for them. Jets are when a body begins to spin in order to conserve momentum, you get an electrojet out at the north and south pole, like you see with a quasar. And you know, these are 10 times the mass of the sun. They have to be in order to have that kind of mass to collect in that kind of area. And it's you know, after adding the jets to the simulation, the star's masses became much more realistic, less than about half the mass of our sun. Now, the jets disrupt the inflow of gas toward the star. If you don't have a way for the gas to get out, then it just keeps accumulating in one place. And yes, you may get fusion to start off, but then what happens is the fusion begins to lose the battle with gravity, and it becomes a neutron star and then eventually a black hole. And that's not the model that we see in space. So the jets have to be there. And people have suspected this might be happening, but when you simulate it and you watch it happening in the math models, it makes a lot more sense. We understand how it works. What is it? Well, that's a good question. Why is this important? Why is it important to understand the way the universe works? Because that's what our consciousness does. You know, we look out at the universe and we see the third dimension, and we realize it's not all traveling at the speed of light. It's because our consciousness has slowed it down so we can behold it. Now, we're out of time. 2 hours goes pretty fast on this program. But this is America Free Radio, and my name is Brooks Agnew. I've been your host for 2 hours. We're here every Wednesday, every Sunday at 8 p.m. And you can chat to your heart's content. I will read the chats. I'll respond to you. And I just have one thing to say. Go out and look for the good in other people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. My name is Brooks Agnew saying, peace, Earth Explorers. Now go and do. Remember, this is the Revolution Radio Network on freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio network in America, maybe in the world. And you could be part of it. Go to freedomslips.com. Contribute regularly. They're taking it out of your check anyway to support NPR. And I know you don't support that crap. So you might as well tax yourself and support freedomslips.com. Many fine shows like us. And thank you so much for the Foxhole people for being here tonight. Wonderful to have you. I'm so honored to be part of your audience. Thank you very much. We'll see you on Sunday night. So be cool out there. I keep waiting. I can kind of slightly hear it in the background, the Freedom Slips Revolution Radio break music. But just wanted to say how much I love you. It's a pleasure being here. 17 years now, and it just gets better. Every week it gets better. See you on Sunday night.
Executive Officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10.